for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Doctors use the detailed images of CT scans to detect injuries and disease within the body. But several new studies say this diagnostic tool could actually cause cancer and death. Dr. Rebecca Smith-Beinman of the University of California, San Francisco, co-authored one of the studies. She joins me in the studio along with Dr. Peter Shields. He's deputy director of the Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center at Georgetown University and joining us from KQED in San Francisco, cardiologist Rita Redberg, editor of the Archives of Internal Medicine, joining us from a studio in Durham, North Carolina, Dr. Donald Frush. He's professor of radiology and pediatrics at Duke University Medical Center. And we do invite your questions, comments throughout the hour. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Dr. Smith-Beinman, if I could start with you and get you to describe how CT scans are different from other image diagnostics.
So there are several different technologies for taking pictures of the body. The most commonly used are X-rays, and X-rays include things like a chest X-ray that everyone's familiar with. A mammogram is an X-ray. A CT scan also uses X-ray technology, but it does so in a way that it takes basically a lot of X-rays. It goes around the body, takes many, many X-rays. And so it just turns out, because of the way the images are acquired, it's regular X-ray technology, but the doses are higher because of how the images are obtained.
The doses are higher, but what's the advantage then of CT scans over other imaging?
I can't underestimate how important CT scanning is to our current diagnosis of a vast array of diseases. Most physicians consider CT scanning the major advance in medicine over the last few decades. And thus, CT scanning is fantastic. It leads to more accurate diagnoses of a range of diseases. And because it's so good, we've increased our utilization of it dramatically over the last decade. We've increased the use of CT threefold. So we use it a lot. It helps a lot. But part of what's happened is we use it now perhaps in situations where we may not need to, or other tests can be used, ultrasound and MRI. I didn't mention those are tests that don't have radiation. We use it for reasons that maybe we don't need imaging at all, where we can just watch a patient. Hmm. And then we use it even for screening. So it's a great test. We've just used it a lot, so the utilization has gone up profoundly. And I think we have not really considered the radiation dose associated with it to the degree we should.
Dr. Rebecca Smith-Beinman, she's a researcher and radiologist from the University of California, San Francisco. She co-authored one of the studies on the risks of cancer from CT scans. The study is entitled Radiation Dose Associated with Common CT Examinations and the Associated Lifetime Attributable Risk of Cancer. And now turning to you, Dr. Redberg, tell us about your studies and what they tell us.
Well, I really tried to weigh for CT scans and for the data that was presented by Dr. Smith-Beinman and by Dr. Barrington in the other article in Archives that projected cancer risks. I tried to take the test and weigh what are the benefits and what are the risks, so that we as a profession could be more aware. Because as Dr. Smith-Beinman just pointed out, CT scans are a great technology, but that doesn't mean we should be using them as often as we are currently. And there were 3 million scans done in 1980 and 72 million done in 2007. That's a just exponential increase. And I think once we learned that there is such variability in the radiation exposure and such potential for excess radiation leading to excess cancer risks and excess deaths, it makes us realize we need to be talking more about what are the benefits and what are the risks for each CT scan that we're ordering.
So if you were to compute the risk for a single patient, then, Dr. Redberg, how large would that risk be?
Right. So that's, of course, the billion-dollar question. And what we can do is, you know, for any patient, they either will or won't get cancer. But we can tell patients that how much they've increased their chances of getting cancer. And, for example, a 40-year-old woman who gets a cardiac CT angiogram to look at her coronary arteries, and I've certainly had patients, 40-year-old women, who were perfectly healthy and had such a test just for screening to see if their heart was okay. Well, they now have a 1 in 270 chance of getting cancer just from that one CT scan. And so sometimes it's hard to think about those numbers, but that's a fairly significant increase in risk.
Dr. Rita Redberg, she's cardiologist and professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, and she is the editor of Archives of Internal Medicine. Turning to you now, Dr. Frush, you think it's more difficult to say that these CT scans are overused?
Well, that's a very good question, is what is appropriate use? And we as healthcare providers are constantly trying to balance our own experience against what is published in the literature in terms of using information, and that might be a laboratory test or a CT exam or a decision whether to go to surgery. So the utilization issue is a very difficult one to address. And while there are some groups and individuals who feel very strongly that that the overutilization of medical tests, including CT examination, is clearly defined, I think it's a little more difficult to say that. Once you get past the utilization issue, we're really dealing with the technology and trying to use it in the most appropriate way, where we need to be mindful of the radiation doses delivered, some of what you've heard about, and be sure that we're doing the appropriate examination for that patient, whether they're a child or an adult, and doing it in the correct way.
Dr. Frush, I gather CT scans are far more rapid in terms of taking the image and then being able to read it.
Well, that's true. And the comments that you and listeners have heard about the advantages of CT are really right on in terms of the importance of this modality. And the increase in use, I think, people need to understand is partly because the technology has become better. It has become faster, as you said, and shows things in better ways. We can look at the inside of the body now in a matter of seconds, even on an adult patient, and display that information in ways that is easier to understand, three-dimensionally or in different planes, so that the disorder, whether it's injury or illness, is much easier to understand.
Dr. Donald Frush, he's chair of the American College of Radiology Pediatric Imaging Commission and professor of radiology and pediatrics at Duke University Medical Center. And now turning to you, Dr. Shields, how much do you rely on CT scans in your patients at the Lombardi Cancer Center?
Well, CAT scans clearly are essential tools. You can't go away from them. They're needed to both diagnose cancer. They're needed to follow cancers. It's the essential way for us to know that cancers are getting better when you treat them. We have other modalities, but we still rely primarily on the CAT scans. That's critical.
And so how frequently would you say they are used?
Well, in the context of cancer, they're used for probably every patient. you know, who's coming in for either the evaluation and then for the follow-up. And our cancer patients will get serial CAT scans over time. And there's very little ways around it. I do agree that there's, and we all understand, that sometimes we use them too frequently. And there are different reasons for that. Sometimes it's based on a clinical suspicion that shouldn't trigger the use. A lot of times we'll say it's important for us to image a certain part of the body, and then we'll say, but as long as we're there, let's get a couple of other parts of the body and make sure the cancer hasn't spread to those areas.
And then the question becomes whether the repeated use of that CAT scan could actually intensify or help the cancer itself to spread.
Right. Well, virtually every medical decision has risks and benefits.
Of course.
Okay. And so in the context of a cancer patient, you're weighing the cancer you know, which in most cases could be potentially fatal, versus the risk of future cancers. And there are, and the concept is not new. I mean, there are certain chemotherapy agents we give to patients, radiation therapy we give to patients that increase cancer risk too. So that's all part of the risk-benefit equation. When we can, we choose chemotherapies that won't, you know, increase the risk of cancers. And we need to do a better job with CAT scans in terms of that decision-making as well.
When we come back after a short break, I do want to talk about the equipment, the training of those who use this equipment, the dosage, and why it is at such variance from person to person and indeed hospital to hospital. Seems to me it's very, very important. 800-433-8850. I look forward to hearing from you. We're talking in this hour about CT scans and several new studies that suggest that this tool could actually cause cancer and death. We have four guests with us. Here's a tweet from Twitter, and it says, "Isn't it true that a large percentage of CT scans are inconclusive and or unreadable?" Dr. Rebecca Smith-Beinman.
That specific point that most CT scans are not useful, I think, is a little bit of an overstatement. I think there's certainly a proportion of CT scans that instead of answering a question lead to more questions. I absolutely believe that. But I think most CT scans give us good information. And so I think we want to think twice about using CT scan, thinking about the radiation, which we have not in the past done. We need to consider it in a risk-benefit equation. But in terms of what we learned from CT scans, not all of them, but most of them provide useful information.
Dr. Redberg, I want to understand the radiation dose itself and how those can vary from CT scanner to CT scanner within the same hospital or establishment, and why that happens.
Well, I think that was the study that was done by Dr. Smith-Beinman and colleagues, and that was a tremendous shock to me that hospitals in San Francisco had as much as a 22-fold variation in radiation dose for the same test. And so what that means is that it was very hard to really tell a patient what their radiation dose would be from the most commonly used CT scans. And it also tells us that there's tremendous potential to be keeping our doses so that everyone was getting radiation on the lower ends for CT scans and not 22 times what they needed to be getting for
now,
those tests.
Now, what's the problem here, Dr. Smith-Beinman? Is it the individual who's operating the equipment? Is it the equipment itself? How can a patient possibly know what he or she is going to be getting?
I think part of the problem is we have not been keeping track of the doses that patients actually get.
How come?
You know, it's very interesting. In an area of radiology, the one test that gets monitored very closely is mammography. And actual doses to patients have been monitored since the 90s. And a result of those efforts by the FDA, the doses associated with mammography have come down dramatically. CT scanners are monitored, but at the manufacturer level, what happens at the individual patient level is simply not monitored. And for the most part, radiologists, technologists have no idea what the doses are. And it turns out it's very complicated to set up a CT scan to take an image of a patient. It's not as simple as pressing a button and then getting a low-dose study. So for me, that was what I learned from this study, is that the doses were actually dramatically variable from patient to patient depending on how the radiologist set up the scan, how the technologist set up the scan, based on what preset parameters were provided by the manufacturer. So all of those things are currently variable and not standardized. And as a result, the doses are very variable.
What about that, Dr. Frosch? Should there be new guidelines for not only the equipment itself, but for the people who were carrying out these studies?
Well, let me take one step back and comment on some of the other reasons for the variability in the examinations. And true, there is going to be a hospital-to-hospital variation that might depend on the preference of the radiologist or the technologist, the person who actually performs the examination. But there are other reasons. For example, a child will need a lower dose than an adult. So an abdomen CT examination in a 5-year-old should have a lower dose than an abdomen CT examination in a 50-year-old.
You said should have, Dr. Frosch.
That's correct.
That's the question, is it not? Should have. Does it have is the other question.
There are variations both in adult scanning and pediatric scanning, and there are going to be institutions that very closely monitor their dose for CT examinations in their pediatric population and those that won't quite as much. There are, in answer to your question then, efforts from a number of organizations. There's a CT accreditation through the American College of Radiology that establishes thresholds for CT dose for both for pediatric and adult scanning. And in order to get this accreditation, you have to show that you have the expertise in your radiologists, the expertise in the technologists, and that the equipment is functioning correctly. There's also moves through the Food and Drug Administration and an organization called MIDA to help to design a program where if an examination were going to be performed, say, that exceeded a dose that was outside of the recommendations of whatever organization, whether it's the ACR or some other standard of care, that scanner may come up with an alert that says, do you realize that you are exceeding this type of dose in this kind of examination? And those efforts are currently underway.
Okay. Tell me about the equipment itself, Dr. Smith-Beinman, and to what extent there are variations within the doses, the levels of radiation, and to what extent manufacturers of this equipment may perhaps unwittingly be responsible.
I think the greater degree of standardization that there is available, the greater the standardization of the studies that we do. And currently, it's been very difficult to get agreement across the radiology societies or across the manufacturers on what would constitute good measurements, what would be acceptable doses, how to minimize those doses. I should point out, in the study that we reported, all the locations used a single manufacturer's equipment, and we found that kind of variation. Had we had more manufacturers, the variation would have been even more dramatic. And so I think we haven't agreed as a society of what we accept in terms of the radiation dose. And there are physicians who have worked very, very hard to lower dose at their individual institutions.
Dr. Shields, do patients ask you what the dosage is when they're receiving CT scans?
They'll never. I haven't had a patient who's asked me the dose. They will frequently say, I'm afraid to get this CAT scan.
Right.
Some will almost refuse it. And then it gets tricky because some people really need that CAT scan in the context. And so one of the things that I want to make sure that your listeners understand is that this is the risk-benefit equation. And to be shying away from CAT scans too much could also have some negative consequences. If you think about the risks are fairly substantial as estimated in these papers. The idea of cancer from CAT scans is not new, but these papers have done it better, and they certainly add a lot to the issue. But when you think about risk estimates of 1 in 270 for women, or risk for 1 in 600 for men, putting in the context that about 1 in 2 men already get cancer and 1 in 3 women get cancer, these risks are really important to reduce maximally. But we also still have to understand that the CAT scans have that critical purpose. And so patients should ask about the dose. They should challenge. Doctors should be thinking, do I really need this CAT scan? The radiologist should be thinking about, how can I reduce the doses to still get that quality image to answer the clinician's question? But then after that, they have to make a decision about whether they get the CAT scan or not. If it's medically necessary, you need it.
Here's an email from Todd. He says, a 1 in 270 person risk of getting cancer from a CAT scan. Please put this into concrete wording. Isn't this just a matter of who will get cancer, not if? Dr. Shields?
Well, not really. And a lot of these risk estimates are really to try to understand risk. They're not directly extrapolatable to an individual. And to think about some other numbers, in these papers, the estimate of the cancers, the excess cancer is about 29,000 per year. Well, we have about 1.4 million people getting cancer each year. So the risk should be manageable and reduced, no question. But they're still small in the greater context. And so I think people need to understand that, and just like any medical procedure, whether it's surgery or others, we want to reduce the harms from them as much as possible.
Dr. Smith Botman, if your group had not done your study, of course we would not be thinking about this at all. And though some patients have come to you, Dr. Shields, and said, I'm really afraid to have a CT scan, don't want it. Nevertheless, what do you hope to accomplish, and how do you really clearly inform the public with this kind of study?
I think our study brought to light an issue that really was entitled to some light. The issue of the radiation from CT has been below everyone's radar.
Why?
I think because there's this belief that CT scanning has really changed practice, that we love CT. Physicians love it.
The doctors love it.
Physicians love it. But patients love it as well. Patients go to their physician and often ask for a CT
image.
Some
go and ask for a whole body scan.
So I actually got a very interesting email from a patient yesterday. And the patient was a 40-year-old who was a very health-conscious individual. He ran many marathons. He took lots of vitamins, does everything for his health, including having gotten repeated full-body CT scans over the last number of years. And now he's quite panicked. And he sent me a list of all the studies he's undergone. And it highlighted this disconnect between people's love of imaging and belief that it can provide assurance that you're healthy, when in fact it comes with a real health risk.
But let me follow up on that. Surely a physician would have said to this individual, you know, you really are taking some risks, some serious risks, if you have repeated body scans.
I think part of the problem is no one's keeping track of people's imaging over time. So I agree that in any given situation, you need to talk closely with your physician about whether imaging is appropriate. But there are some patients, and I can help you identify those groups, who come back over and over again for imaging, where it's not clear that that imaging is going to really influence their clinical decision making. And then you're setting yourself up for having risk without benefit.
Dr. Shields.
It's complicated in the sense that personally, about 4 years ago, my internist, who I obviously am not going to name, he's my internist. I think he's a fabulous doctor, and I should have the ability to judge a good doctor technically from a bad doctor. And 4 years ago, he recommended to me to get a total body CAT scan. And I looked at him and said, you know what I do for a living. Why are you even telling me you do that? And his response was, a lot of my patients can afford it. They're willing to go through this because of the chance of picking up some small cancer. And funny enough, the next year, I asked him how it was going, and he told me he stopped it, because he was picking up so many unnecessary things and triggering things.
That are partly, you know, just right. Part of being human.
That's right. And so one of the challenges in the cancer field is that there's emerging concepts of using CAT scans for screening and early detection of cancer. So right now there's a 60,000-person study going on for CAT scan screening of the lungs in smokers. There's studies going on to show that CAT scanning virtual colonoscopy might be as good as colonoscopy, so people don't have to get colonoscopy. Well, the implications of these studies, when you talk about now making it recommended CAT scans for like women with mammography, could be very complicated.
Dr. Peter Shields, he's deputy director of the Lombardi Cancer Center at Georgetown University, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Dr. Smith-Beinemann, I know you wanted to add to that.
Something that people really understand is that in mammography, we have things called false positive diagnoses. So there's a finding on the mammogram, we don't know what it is, and the woman comes back for lots more testing. The exact same thing happens with CT scans, and that's an area where we see something, we don't know what it means, so we get another CAT scan. And I think that's an area where the small amount of uncertainty and probably very small risk of cancer then leads to a lot of additional imaging. And that's an area where I think we're really overusing CT scanning. And so when we use CT scan for a clinical question, it often leads us down this path of seeing things in other organ systems. And as CT scanning has gotten so much better, we see smaller and smaller lesions. It's escalating the amount of follow-up. So I think understanding that and then thinking about, well, do we really need to get another CT scan? Can we wait a longer period of time before we follow it would be an easy way to decrease what I consider unnecessary imaging.
Dr. Redberg, what do you believe the end result of these studies might be in terms of informing patients, doctors, manufacturers, hospitals? What do you hope might be the outcome?
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to start having a national discussion just like the one we're having now. I did want to point out that it's possible that that 40-year-old man didn't even see a doctor to get those full-body scans, because we now have direct-to-consumer advertising for CT scans, and there are a lot of very aggressive medical imaging centers set up, and you land at an airport in many cities, and you'll see ads in the airport to come, you know, prevent cancer, early detection, and they're all centered around getting full body or particular part CT scans. And we've gotten such a fascination with the images, because they are very beautiful, that we've now come to think of the images as a way to prevent cancer, prevent heart disease. And I think we have to kind of shift our paradigm away from assuming that more tests and more and that images are always leading to better care, and realize that tests are not. They can be helpful, but where we have to get back to lifestyle measures and, you know, diet and lifestyle to prevent heart disease and prevent cancer, and not think of getting a CT scan as a way to prevent heart disease, for example. And so I think in terms of the national discussion, you know, we've learned a lot now about what are the radiation doses. We've learned to ask about the radiation doses. Patients really don't have a way to know how much radiation are they getting, not only with each CT scan, but over a lifetime, because we believe the cancer risk is cumulative over your lifetime exposure to radiation. And so we can start talking about that, talking about ways patients can keep track as well as doctors. And I think we, as physicians, can do a better job of informing our patients, because I don't think that we are currently routinely discussing the radiation risk for CT scans as we could be now that we have more information.
Dr. Rita Redberg, she's a cardiologist, professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, and editor of Archives of Internal Medicine. Short break, then we'll open the phones. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, informing health reform with policy research, data, and expert commentary on the web at healthreform.org, by the Gruber Family Foundation to extend the breadth and depth of NPR's international coverage, and by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. This is NPR.
New Yorker staff writer George Packer, on his post-9/11 travels through war zones, the pitfalls of idealism, and the Obama administration's challenge of moving from rhetoric to policy. The Diane Rehm Show. Next hour. And the question that continues to come up in our emails from you, in our telephone calls, here's one from George that puts it right into the mark. How often can an MRI be used instead of a CAT scan? There is no radiation with the MRI. Dr. Frush.
Well, that would depend on the patient-doctor relationship and the specific question being asked. I think most physicians who are informed would make that decision about an MRI
on what
as
basis?
As preferred over CT, depending on what the MRI could show. There are obviously patients that can't undergo an MRI examination for a variety of reasons.
Well, but there are the open, yeah, I understand the pacemaker problem. There used to be that fear of enclosed places, but there's
correct.
Now the open MRI.
Right. So the claustrophobia issue has become less with that. But you can't say categorically that every time this happens, an MRI will be obtained over a CT examination. There are issues with the timeliness of the examination, the availability at 3 in the morning in the emergency room of a CT scan where that information can be obtained instantly and decisions can be made versus having to go perhaps to a remote part of the hospital and have an MRI examination. I think it's a very good question. And if I could step back and continue a thought that was going before the break.
But no, I want to stay for a moment with this MRI versus CAT scan because the MRI is clearly more expensive than the CAT scan. Is it not, Dr. Shields?
Yes, it is. And I think that's one of the issues that would have to be considered. You know, the healthcare debate right now is very, very hot. This morning I heard on the radio using these studies as another way of the government trying to reduce the access of people to healthcare. You know, just like what happened with the mammography debate. It's almost like it was planted and coming out now. Well, that's clearly not the case. I mean, we're all researchers. We're not influenced by this one way or another. But either way, there is a cost consideration. And so if a CAT scan can give you the same information as the MRI, the question is who will pay for that MRI?
And the insurance company is presumably paying for the MRI, but the patient is paying in terms of cost of health in terms of the CAT scan. Is that fair to say? You
know, on a practical level, Dr. Fresh was alluding to this. We don't have the current capacity in the U.S. to replace CT scans with MRI scan, even in all the circumstances where we would want to. CT scanning is very, very quick. We have enormous capacity, whereas MR scans are much slower. So it's just not nearly as efficient. And I think there are many more cases that end up being non-diagnostic with MRI. It's a great test, and we absolutely should be using it more in circumstances where we want to reduce radiation.
Because there is no radiation.
So an example would be, certainly we use it in pregnant patients where we really want to stay away from CT scan. Well, we might want to use it more in young patients where we also want to stay away from radiation.
All right. Let's open the phones, 800-433-8850. First to Amherst, Ohio. Good morning, Linda.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show.
Thank you.
And I've been really sick over this information because I, along with probably a lot of parents out there, gave my son a CAT scan about 10 years ago. Is there anything you can tell me to make me feel better or to calm me down about this? Because I'm just really worried now, and I'm wondering, does he need extra screening? Is there things I should tell my pediatrician about?
Why did he undergo a CAT scan?
They thought his head was too big, and they were trying to figure out why, and it turns out he was absolutely fine, and actually the CAT scan, he wouldn't hold still, and he never did actually get a good picture.
Okay. Dr. Smith-Bottman.
I would say two things. I'd say first, the radiation dose for an individual study, particularly a study of the brain.
And a child.
Even in a child is relatively low. The doses are much higher in an abdomen than they are in the head. So on an individual basis, the risks associated with CT scanning, particularly the brain, are very small. And so I would not be concerned, and there's nothing else to possibly do in terms of monitoring your son, but I would not be concerned. And I should say, on a personal level, I've had CTs, my children have had CTs. It's just important to think about when you get them, be prudent about them. But if there's an indication for getting it, and I could imagine lots of things that your physicians were looking for, if it's reasonable, the risks are very small.
All right. To Kathy in Traverse City, Michigan. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
When I was 40 years old, which was in 1997, I was diagnosed with a retroperitoneal liposarcoma. It was found through a gynecological ultrasound. They weren't looking for it. And I had a successful resection of the tumor, and I've had no recurrence, but between the years 97 and 2007, between 40 and 50, I had somewhere between 25 and 30 screening CAT scans of my pelvis, abdomen, and chest, because this tends to be of have a very high recurrence rate and also usually return at a higher grade tumor, and a lot of people die from this particular kind of cancer. So my question is, with wanting to be vigilant and without being overly panicked or fearful, what should I be doing to monitor my potential for a secondary cancer? Because I keep hearing that there are higher risks of cancer. Are we talking about cancers of particular organs? Are we looking at blood cancers? So I have no idea.
All right, Dr. Shields.
Well, so there's several questions embedded in there. So the first one is that we really don't have good data on how often to follow up patients. So physicians decide that they want to do the CAT scans for a cancer patient every 6 months, once a year, spread it out. In most cases, most cancers, by about 5 years, you could stop, but they're often going out as long as 5 years. And we don't really have the data to say how much this really helps us in terms of picking up those cancers, because in general, an early cancer is more easily treatable. But that's not always the case. And so for specific cancers, you would need to know whether you really need to find that cancer when it's, you know, a half a centimeter versus, you know, 5 centimeters.
So but the point would be, if she were to follow up with even more CAT scans, might she run the risk of creating a problem for herself that did not exist previously?
There's always exceptions, but for most cancers, there will be a point when CAT scans should stop. Okay, and in terms of following up, for what her risks are, it's going to be frustrating for me to say this, but you know, we don't really have additional testing, whether it's CAT scans or blood testing or whatever. And I think, you know, we have to be vigilant and monitor for cancer like we do patients for the general population. Again, it's, you know, 29,000 patients per year is a lot of patients.
Yeah.
But that's also not enough to necessarily alter general screening practices compared to the 1.4 million.
All right. And Dr. Redberg, I want to follow up with you. I asked you earlier what you hope the message might be to the public. What about the message to doctors? What are you saying to them?
Well, again, to doctors, I do think it has to come from patients and from physicians. I think we need to be more communicative about radiation risks, about alternatives to CT scans. And certainly there are CT scans, you know, that are indicated, that are important, and there isn't an alternative. But it's also quite certain that there are CT scans that simply didn't need to be done, or that an alternative could happen. And so I think, just like it would be for any test a doctor orders, I feel I want to be able to tell the patient what are the benefits for this test and then what are the risks. And I think we need to do a better job in particular for CT scans, because with the improvement in technology and the beautiful images we get, I think we've been a little more transfixed by the images and the technology and less focused on, okay, now how is this CT scan going to help me to take care of this patient better? And so I think as a profession, we can have more conversations about the risks and the benefits, because I think it's also true that a lot of patients have not been informed of what the radiation doses are and what possible excess cancer risks there are associated with some CT scans, which are, some of them are, you know, 400 chest x-rays is the equivalent of one CT scan, depending on the kind of test you're getting. So it's something that we really do need to be telling patients up front.
Dr. Frisch, I would think that a great many people, not only hearing this program this morning, but having heard the news that's come out about CT scans over the past few days, would be totally terrified. What are you hearing from patients?
The questions that have come from your callers even this morning are very similar to what I think we've all been hearing over the years. We've all known in the medical profession, particularly radiology, that CT scans have a relatively high radiation dose, and that those can vary for many necessary reasons. I think that what is important about this group of articles that appeared in Archive, and I want to applaud Dr. Redberg for her insight here, is that this information now is communicated beyond radiology to other specialists, and that this information beyond those specialists can go to the public. So what, in the end, a provocative set of articles like this can do is inform the public and inform physicians so that the discussion between those two very important components in healthcare can come about in an informed way. So patients have to be advocates for their own health, and this kind of information provides the education and the information to discuss the risk side of the equation and help to make a more informed discussion.
All right.
Understanding the value of CT.
A more informed discussion, Dr. Smith-Beinman. But if you don't have the facts, how can you make an informed decision? I'm going back to those studies you did at the two California hospitals where the CT scan showed totally different levels coming out of similar equipment, same hospitals. What about the responsibility of the manufacturers?
I think this is a wake-up call that we need to hold them much more accountable, much more quickly. The manufacturers are working on this. I don't want to say they're not. They're not. They're trying to lower doses. They're not doing it nearly as quickly as the science would allow. So they're developing new CT scanners that will have lower dose, but I'd like to see much more rapidly they're disseminating software products that could lower dose right now at a reasonable cost that the radiologist could use it. It needs to be as easy as pressing a button to get an appropriate dose. The two ways to lower the population's exposure to medical imaging radiation is to decrease the number of scans, and we need much more evidence-based guidelines about how to use imaging. The patients who have been calling in, we don't have answers to her question, but we also need to lower the dose per study, and the manufacturers need to be very actively involved in that.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Of course, the FDA is looking into these problems at the California hospitals because they say it's unclear whether the dangerous exposures were caused by human error or a problem with the CAT scan equipment. Now, you did those studies in California. If you were to do them at Georgetown University, Sibley Hospital here in New York, wouldn't you find the same kinds of problems?
We are currently studying dose information at hundreds of hospitals across the country.
Good.
So I fully agree that we'll have similar results. I think with the FDA, my understanding is what they're focusing on is very extreme outlier doses like we've seen at these few hospitals, and they're looking to put into place fail-safe mechanisms so you don't have that happening. But more important to my mind is the average doses that most patients see. So the extremes are completely unacceptable, but most patients see the average doses, and I think that's where we can have the biggest impact, and that we have to do to collect the data to then have an impact on reducing dose.
All right. To Edmonds, Oklahoma. Good morning, Sheila.
Thank you so much for allowing me to join this dialogue. I am calling to relate my experience with diagnostic imaging. My son, 2 years ago at age 13, was diagnosed with stage 2A Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was enrolled in a federally funded chemotherapy-only phase 3 clinical trial. He obviously had numerous diagnostic imaging. The first day that he had any scans, he underwent 7 CT scans, a PET scan with a full-body CT scan, and a radioactive tracer that was injected for a subsequent gallium scan. Even though this was a clinical trial, there was no informed consent provided that there was any risks at all associated with the scans. I actually only found out after he achieved remission months later when you interviewed Deborah Davis in October of 2007, and I was so disheartened to realize that there had been a preventable risk that could have been controlled that I had no ability to mitigate because the appropriate information hadn't been conveyed. I did have my son's cumulative exposure.
All right, and I'm going to have to urge you on. We're almost out of time.
Okay. The fact that informed consent wasn't provided within the framework of a federally funded clinical trial indicates to me how pervasive the problem is.
All right. And Dr. Smith-Beinman, do you want to answer that?
I think in the setting of your son's disease, my guess is that you got a whole lot of value out of that imaging that really dominated his overall risk-benefit equation.
But the point she's raising is informed consent.
So I couldn't agree more that that should be something that you are informed of. And in clinical trials, we do a lot of imaging, and we need to consider that as a piece of information to be considered.
All right. And clearly, there's an awful lot more to be considered here. I'm glad you all were with me this morning, Dr. Rebecca Smith-Beinman, Dr. Peter Shields, Dr. Rita Redberg, and Dr. Donald Frush. Clearly, there's a great deal more to say, and we will follow this subject. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.